This episode of Own the Gray is brought to you by I Am. Discover your unique talents, realize your potential, and align to your path. Take the first step to uncover your life purpose by visiting deborahjones.ca/courses. Life is a journey, and part of that experience is exploring what makes you happy and what doesn't. But sometimes a lack of reflection on those experiences leads to stumbling along, taking a very long and windy road towards fulfillment and prosperity when a shorter one was available. Will Shurma's new book, Fulfilled, Finding Joy and Prosperity in Life, offers skills, resources, and techniques that anyone can use to find happiness in their lives. We talk about the 6 essential keys to finding that fulfillment, and they involve your character, emotional intelligence, resilience and stress management, managing relationships, self-development, and managing outcomes. Listen in on the faster route to happiness. Welcome to Own the Gray, a podcast to dispel the notion that aging is undesirable and setting new positive attitudes. I'm Deborah Jones, and I believe you can be vibrant and healthy throughout the best years of your life. Will Shurma is a senior management professional in human resources, a speaker and coach in leadership, personal growth and fulfillment, and professional development. He's author of The Leadership Core, Competencies for Successfully Leading Others, and he's just released, hot off the press, his second book that's going to help us find more meaning and significance in our lives, especially as we explore the next chapters. Will, welcome to Own the Gray.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk with you and your listeners.
So what's the title of your new book and why did you write it?
The title of the second book is called Fulfilled, Finding Joy and Prosperity in Life. And the book, interestingly enough, came out of a leadership training program initially, where we were designing and implementing a program for aspiring leaders. And we were trying to teach them that before you can lead others, you have to lead yourself. And as I got thinking about this program that I'd implemented a number of years ago, it wasn't so much great advice for leading others as it was some tips on how to lead a more fulfilling life, frankly. And they include some concepts which I think are quite universal in terms of people being able to, you know, lead themselves towards a greater sense of prosperity and fulfillment. And that really is what sort of transformed the idea into writing a book about personal growth and fulfillment.
Yeah. So your book helps us explore some really deep topics such as emotional intelligence and resilience and managing change, which I think those are topics that we could all really use a little bit of help with right now. But you've identified 6 main topics. Why don't we talk about each of those topics today?
That's fine. More than happy to.
Well, the first one, it's about the importance of character in life's journey. What do you mean?
So character was always something that we taught in workplace environments and the importance of individuals exploring their character traits. And as we got thinking about this, we talk about several important character aspects that I think help people in their lives, you know, both at work and at home. And in this book, in Fulfilled, I talk about integrity, humility, accountability, and also compassion. And when we think about these things individually, they're really important to how we lead a life that is authentic and also how we build and maintain relationships both with ourselves and with others. So for example, integrity is all about being honest, being transparent, doing what we say that we will do. The sense of trustworthiness and of the fact that you can be counted on by your friends, family, loved ones, individuals at work, to be true to yourself in terms of how you act is really important, because, of course, without trust, you can't build relationships, and relationships are the currency with which we all trade. And of course, as we continue to, I think, grow in our own lives, we realize how important relationships are, when sometimes earlier in our lives, we put career perhaps out of perspective in terms of prioritizing it above the relationships with our friends, family, and other loved ones as well. So integrity is really important. I talk about humility as well, because there's a sense, particularly as people advance, for example, in their career or life, they become more experienced, they gain expertise, and sometimes they can fall into arrogance. And we all know that those that are arrogant tend to treat people with less value or disrespectfully, and don't tend to take their opinions into account. And this, of course, leads to isolating behavior. It's not behavior that's well thought of. And mm-hmm. so this can be detrimental to relationships as well. So having a healthy sense of humility, knowing that we can learn from anyone, is really important. You know, if we're open to it, if we realize that learning is a journey that's never finished. I do talk about accountability as well, and that is really doing what you say that you'll do when and how you said you'd do it. So this is a sense of follow through, and individuals being able to count on you as a friend or family member or colleague. And that's important, because that builds trust as well. And having some sense of accountability for your behavior and your performance in or out of the office is really important. And then lastly, I talk about compassion and forgiveness. And that's really important too, because we have to remember that we are all human. We all make mistakes. We all stumble. And showing other individuals compassion, a little bit of forgiveness, a little bit of empathy is really important, because we've all been there. And it's expected. It's the decent human thing to do. It's a great way to lead at work. And it's also a great way to lead your own life at home. So the ability to show that compassion both to others and to yourself, and that's mm-hmm. important, and to forgive others and yourself for mistakes is how we bond. And we need to remember that. You know, having someone who has a critical heart, who is very cold and unforgiving, frankly, isn't not a great environment to be around. And so we have to remember that showing compassion and forgiveness is something that allows other people to gravitate towards us as well.
Yeah, those are really important things to think about. And I wonder, the way that your book is structured, do you have questions that we can answer for ourselves, or how do we actually delve into our own personal character and so that we can see who we are and how we need to change if we need to change?
Yes, that's a good point. And there are breaks in each section that do have some questions for reflection. And I think this is really important. You know, there's many different ways in which we learn and grow, and I don't pretend to have all of the answers, but hopefully it will allow people to explore themselves further and to really reflect and ask questions of themselves. So this is really important, because we're all on a journey towards greater fulfillment and learning, and we should ask ourselves some fundamental questions about who we are, what we stand for, and what we hope to continue to gain in this next journey in our life. And I think this is particularly important as we continue to age. I am in my 50s, and I'm now thinking very differently about my career and about how the course of my life has gone than I did even 10 years ago. We begin to take stock of our lives, I think, more and more consciously. And this is partly what the book is for as well. It happens and can happen at any age, but I think it happens much more as we advance in our career and we begin to think about how have we lived and what do we hope to accomplish, you know, as we continue to age as well. So yes, asking questions and listening is really important. And hopefully this book will do that for the readers.
Yeah, it's something that when we reach that halfway mark, I call it at 50, our values start to shift and change as well. And to go through the rest of our life with the same thoughts and the same beliefs might not be the path to a fulfilled life. And so I really see the importance of the reflection and to just go over our values at the time and who we are as a person. And even though you might have lived your life a certain way up until now, it doesn't mean you have to continue that way. And I love the idea that you have a tool that's going to help us ask ourselves those questions. And maybe the answers are the same, but maybe they're different. And how would we know if we hadn't asked the question?
Yes, I think that's incredibly important. And we have to remember that if life has gone well by all accounts for us, that's wonderful. And if we reflect back and things aren't as we might have hoped, remember that we are only a prisoner to our past if we allow that to happen as well. And I think that asking these questions allows us to free us from that burden of the past. Because if we're constantly obsessing about the past or worrying about the future, we forget to live for today, and our values do evolve throughout our lives. And I think our priorities, and again, the sort of core beliefs, they transition slowly, but they do transition. And it is, we are different people, sometimes fundamentally, when we are 50 than when we were 20. This periodic taking stock, but with an air of gratitude is really important. Gratitude rather than regret.
Yeah, that's really important. The second point that you make is about emotional intelligence. What is emotional intelligence?
Yes, well, emotional intelligence really is your ability to, to regulate and control and leverage emotion constructively. And, whether this is in the workplace or regarding personal relationships, it is that ability really to, again, regulate and wield emotion effectively in your life. And there's a number of different aspects to this. And the book outlines them in quite a bit of detail. And I go into this perhaps more than any other area because I think it's so crucial. And it's something that we often don't think about, particularly earlier in our lives, the importance of our ability to control our emotions. Oftentimes, the focus is on skill or knowledge. And it's actually been found that people that are very good in terms of their emotional control and self-awareness tend to be more effective, both in the workplace and outside of the workplace as well, in influencing and in shaping the course of their lives. So we do talk about self-awareness. I will admit, earlier in my career, I didn't have a great degree of, I think, of self-awareness. And as we take more time to take stock of our lives, I think there's also more time to reflect mm-hmm. on, who we are and how we're perceived by others. So this idea of self-awareness, both from our own point of view and others, is important. So I talk about internal self-awareness, which is your knowledge of yourself. Do you really have good knowledge of your values, principles, and beliefs? And do you use them consistently in your life? Do you act authentically? Are you consciously aware of your aspirations and your motivators? What does drive you? What does drive your behavior? What are your longer term aspirations? And again, as we take stock later in our lives of what we hope to accomplish in the next chapter, those aspirations have probably changed from 10 or 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And a big part of this is motivation. So I do talk about external motivators, which are things that must be given to you and can be withheld. For instance, things like money, trophies, recognition. The internal motivators, the things that lie within you, are typically much more sustainable. And I will say more healthy. It puts us in a less fragile place when we have the ability to motivate ourselves, for example, through a sense of challenge, progress, and achievement, or purpose and meaning. And I think, again, as we evolve and advance in our lives, purpose, meaning, and significance becomes incredibly important. Mm-hmm. It's the fundamental human question, isn't it? Why am I here? And what sort of legacy will I leave when I'm gone? And will it be a good one? There are other types of motivators, inclusion and affiliation. So for example, continuing to have social ties and a healthy network as we age, you know, has been proven to be very important.
Yeah.
And this is key. So of course, you know, this longing for social contact is a part of that need for inclusion and affiliation, and also personal growth and learning. And we all know that that happens at any age. So we talk about these motivators. I talk about the role of ego, which I think is important. We all have ego, but when it gets out of control, it can inhibit our relationships, our self-awareness, and also our personal effectiveness. Other aspects include things like our ability, of course, to control our emotions and to control our attitude. So how do we have an attitude that is one of growth? And how do we have an attitude that is one of gratitude and optimism as well? Because we all know these things affect our lives. We all know that how we feel is a product of how we think. And our behavior is often a product of how we feel. So if you control your thoughts, of course, you control your behaviors and emotions. And this is the idea with emotional intelligence.
It sounds like all of those points that you talked about, they could just be a book unto themselves, couldn't they?
Yes, and many more accomplished writers than I about this subject have done just that. You know, when you think about emotional intelligence, there's some great books out there, frankly, about this, and it delves deeply into this subject. And I do think it's important. It's an understated part of personal effectiveness and personal growth and fulfillment. And it's not something like leadership itself, for example, it's not something that's taught. Mm-hmm. It's something that's self-taught, and it's often self-taught the hard way through mistakes. And wouldn't it be nice to have a little greater knowledge about this going in, so we can at least be sensitive to those things that are triggers for us emotionally? You know, what do we get really riled up about? And when we do, have we said or done things that we regret? Let's know these things ahead of time, so we can be aware and better regulate, you know, our emotions, and therefore our ability to deal with people who might seem difficult to us. So yes, there's a lot of work done in this area, and I really would encourage people who are interested in emotional intelligence to explore some of the writers out there.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of writing a book and putting your own perspective in the book, because you've obviously done your research in that field that would help you do the job and be the person that you want to be. But you've kind of filtered it through your own perspective, and that's what you're sharing with us. And I think that's the beauty of reading books by different people, because of the different perspectives that can come out.
Yes. And the book's really meant to be a primer covering several of these different competencies to allow people to really dig in. And if you're looking for a functional expert in one of those areas, there are indeed lots of great authors out there.
So the next point was resilience and stress management. Okay, there's a big one too.
It is a big one. And it's one that's particularly applicable in today's social environment. We've gone through significant changes in the way in which we work, live, and interact over the last couple of years because of the pandemic. And we all have different challenges, different stressors in our lives. And it's important to understand that resilience isn't something you're born with, any more than people are born to lead. I don't ascribe to that. I believe that you can develop, and you can develop resilience through a few practices. We do talk about the importance of perception. For instance, looking at how do we reframe events. What is a crisis to one person is an opportunity to another, for example. Mm-hmm. What is a loss for someone can be a door opening or a gain for another. So how do we flip the script in our minds to think about that and to understand that, again, you can go down the dark corridors of your mind, but then you imprison yourself there if you continue to do that? And oftentimes, when we think about rejection or criticism, we are often our own worst enemy, you know, replaying things that we could have done differently over and over and over in our head, saying, well, if I'd only done this or that, or if I've been rejected once, now I think, well, for all time, I'm going to be rejected in future. So we talk about those sorts of things. And certainly a lot of resilience is, it lies between your ears in terms of how we reframe, how we look at things, ensure that we keep them in perspective, and how we deal with rejection and criticism. And I do talk about that. Now, I think to an extent, rejection and criticism, probably outside of the workplace, it's not that it's less applicable, but I think that, you know, there's some other aspects of resilience that I think are very universal. And it's also about treating yourself right, having some self-compassion, making sure that you have a healthy network. You know, before a crisis comes up in your life, do you know who you can turn to? Who are the empathetic people that can validate your feelings and be that that shoulder to cry on, so to speak, that will allow you to vent? You know, good listeners. It's always important to have some sage person in our life that we can turn to who's going to provide us some wise counsel. And you want more than one, right? If that person's on vacation, who do you turn to? So having a network, you know, friends and family and colleagues to turn to is important. And again, particularly as we age and people sometimes grow apart, you know, it's really important to maintain those contacts. So, you know, having this network also makes you feel normal. You know, when you feel like you're the only one in the world dealing with this particular problems, these people make you feel normal, right? Mm-hmm. They can say, yes, I've dealt with this too, and I've overcome it, for example. We do talk about, again, some fundamentals, just how do you treat your mind with some compassion? You know, taking time to reflect, meditation, for example, whatever you do. I'm a runner. So, you know, the time that I'm out running is typically the best time for me to reflect. Everybody's got something different, but ensuring that you've got that time is important. And there's fundamentals about, you know, how we eat, sleep, exercise, what we put in our bodies that ensures that we may be more ready to face the challenges of our lives. We all know of people that have had unhealthy coping mechanisms, including addiction. And so, you know, how we respond to those things is important. How we manage ourselves through change as well. You know, how we break down seemingly insurmountable problems into bite-sized chunks. I call it eating the elephant one bite at a time. Mm-hmm. And other techniques in which we can try and put one day at a time together in order to progress in our lives. So I think dealing with change is incredibly important as well, and seeking some balance in our lives. This is what we learn as we grow, frankly, as we age. More contentment in our life is more about balancing the things that we find fulfilling and not putting all our eggs into one emotional basket too. So this idea of resilience and how we manage stress, I think, is incredibly important at any age.
Yeah, I would totally agree. Being a healer myself and helping people navigate changes in their life, that really is the main thing, is finding a balance. That's what I'd say all the time, is you need to find a balance. If you've got the stresses in your life, the more stress you have, the more joy and happiness you need to find just to balance that out. As you said, it's not something that we're born knowing how to do. And I'm really glad that you touch on these things. I mean, your book is just so rich with information. I'm really excited to read it. But yeah, resilience and stress management is the key, because if you can't manage your stress, you're not going to have a happy existence, right?
We aren't the best version of ourselves. You know, we can't be the best friend, parent, sibling, if we are unsuccessfully coping. And we all have run into those challenges where we need help to cope, and that's perfectly normal. But it's important that we at least seek that help and use this variety of resources to remain resilient and figure out how to manage through this stress. Unfortunately, we're going to be mired in a place that's really unhealthy for us.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads to the next section, which is about managing relationships. What do you share with us about that?
It's a basic primer about relationship management. In the book, I talk about investing in relationships. You know, you have to decide whether to spend time, effort, and resources into relationships. And sometimes we dip our toe in, a wait and see game where we're deciding based on how other people react, how far in we go. And of course, early in life, when it concerns love, we often jump in with both feet, right? Up beyond our heads. Mm-hmm. I think, again, as we grow, sometimes we take a more cautious approach. I don't know whether it's more skeptical, but it's a decision about how far and how fast to invest in relationships. And only you know how that will go based on early interactions with others. But if you're going to get the most out of a relationship, you have to decide to make a sincere investment and also to build trust. And this is, again, where this concept of integrity comes in relationships, where we have been involved in relationships where there's been manipulation, gaslighting, half-truths, ulterior motives. We know how unhealthy these relationships can be. And so, like any aspect of your interactions in life or in work, you have to build it on a sound foundation of trust, right? You don't have to think about whether you are potentially being manipulated. You just know that the other party is trying to do something not only for their benefit, but for yours as well. So this idea of trust is important. How we build rapport is important. And this is often about emotion. You know, relationships are about emotion. And we get into relationships because they make us feel good about ourselves. That's the point. And we do that by making other people feel good about themselves. So building rapport is about that. And if we concentrate on the, you know, what other people get out of the relationship and we focus on others, often we find that comes back to us with a dividend, right? It's some sort of relationship karma that happens. Hmm. So this idea of building effective rapport is key. And we go through some of the techniques in talking about healthy rapport building. Empathy is of course, critical. Your ability to identify with another person, how they are thinking, how they are feeling, and putting ourselves in their shoes is a fundamental way of building rapport and of ensuring that there's a mutual sense of respect while understanding that we are going to disagree and that's going to be okay. There is some discussion in here about conflict and dealing with difficult people. Oftentimes, people see conflict as win-lose, as if there is a pie to be divided somehow. And that's simply not the case. If we think about the pie being infinite and only limited by the solutions that we come up with together, it's a much healthier place to be. Some of the techniques are flipping the script, where it's not you against me, it's you and me against the problem. So we use joining language. What can you and I together do to resolve this? Dealing with conflict. Conflict is never magically resolved because we just deny its existence. It tends to fester and grow. Sometimes we have to make decisions about relationships that not everyone is worth maintaining. Sometimes there are unhealthy relationships. They don't make us feel good about ourselves. And while we want to try and change and adapt to save relationships where it's worthwhile, on rare occasion, we have to make the decision that we are better off ending the relationship and moving forward with our lives in a different direction.
Mm-hmm. And I think that self-reflection on how it's affecting you and what your values are come into play in a big way in that, don't they?
It does. And it takes courage. And we all know people or have been there ourselves where we maintain toxic relationships. We're seeking the wrong kind of attention or love. You're right. If we have the courage or conviction to be consistent with our beliefs, values, and principles, on occasion, that means cutting the ties. But to be able to say, you know, this isn't in keeping with how I want to feel when I wake up every day and in who I want to be. You know, this is holding me back and I've made a good faith effort to try and change the relationship for the better, and it just hasn't happened. You're very right. You know, this idea of reflecting and reflecting on how it may conflict with your values is critical.
Mm-hmm. And that leads us beautifully into the next section about self-development. You talked about our personal growth is a journey without an end. Tell us about that.
And I think this is often what we tend to reflect on as we age is, you know, oftentimes we become an expert in one area. Sometimes that inhibits our personal growth, of course, and that's that sense of ego. But I think this understanding that life becomes a little more exciting when we embrace the fact that we're on the journey. You know, it's not at an end. It's not at an end in our 50s and our 70s and our 80s. There's always something that we can be learning. And, you know, when we combine that with our talents and passions, it does add fulfillment to our lives. So I do talk about personal growth and self-development. So it's about taking on a learner's perspective. And that is about how do we manage ego? How do we prepare ourselves to learn? How do we understand that anyone can teach us? If we are in the right perspective, we can learn something from anyone along the way. And if we have a growth mindset, life becomes a little more exciting because we understand that there might be some unexpected lesson that occurs throughout any day. So I do talk about, you know, getting a mindset of learning in place, and also embracing the fact that to learn, there's going to be discomfort. This often happens during times of change when people are used to being the expert. Now they're the novice and they're having to relearn. And if we can embrace that mindset and a sense of humility and the fact that discomfort and mistakes are a part of learning, you're going to trip up and that's okay. Mistakes are a part of the journey to success. It's not something horrible to be avoided. You know, as you think about what you want to do with the next chapter of your life, have you really put in the groundwork to figure out how you'll best learn and how you'll best tackle this? You know, what resources are out there for you? Are there classes? Are there experiences? You know, adventure vacations are all the rage, right? Where mm-hmm. not only are we vacationing, we're learning something new about ourselves or something in a totally different area of our life we've had an interest in. So that's really important as well, right? You have to prepare to be a good learner, both in your head and prepare the resources. And getting a variety of perspectives is important. So just like resilience, you know, having a network when you learn is important as well. So we don't often think about this. We just go, we plow into learning spontaneously. And if we think about doing some groundwork or doing a little research as we step into that next chapter, it's important because wherever our talents and our passions collide is where we get real fulfillment. And we want that to happen. And I think planning out how we learn a little bit, make sure that will happen more often.
Wow, where our talents and passions collide. I never really thought about that way. That's a statement right there. Tell us again what that was.
It sounds like a good title for a third book, which hopefully will be out a little later in the year, which is indeed the title of my third book. You know, when we think about really where excellence and fulfillment is, it's where our greatest strengths are. And when we combine that with something we're truly passionate about, we get lost in the moment. It's often called being in the zone or being in flow. And this is what we want to capture. And if we can capture that later in life, this is where we really get a deep sense of personal fulfillment in our lives. And I think much greater than, frankly, when we're doing it at work.
Something that came up when you were talking, and I wonder, it's about not wanting to fail. And I wonder, where does humor come in?
Emotional intelligence has been called a meta skill, right? That cuts across all areas of your personal effectiveness. I think humor is one of those, it's almost a meta resource, isn't it? That, you know, you have to be able to approach life with a sense of positivity, a sense of gratitude, and optimism, and also a sense of humor. Because often, you know, for us, this is a coping mechanism. You often probably know people, right, who cope with challenge and stress through humor. But absolutely. And I think you have to be able to laugh at yourself and draw a little bit of fun out of everything that you do. And we all know of the physical and mental benefits, right, of humor and laughter. I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think sometimes we take life too seriously and a little bit of laughter just kind of resets it and we can start again, right?
Exactly right. Isn't it a great way of breaking the ice?
It is. It's wonderful. And so the last topic in your book is about managing outcomes. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's about performance management. You know, there are some fundamental concepts around performance management that work well in any aspect of your life. And so we talk about things like setting expectations. You have to be clear on what you expect of yourself. Have you written that down? Do you have goals and aspirations? What are they? Goals are typically short or medium-term aims, right? They have an end point. They can be measured. Do you have a goal, and do you have a way of knowing whether you'll hit the goal? In the workplace, we call it KPIs, right? Key performance indicators. But outside of work, we just say, well, we'll know that we graduated college because the KPI will be the certificate I get, right, when I walk across the stage. Whatever it is, but being clear in your mind about what your expectations are for performance, making sure that that's well communicated to yourself. Communicate it to others as well if you want to increase your accountability for reaching the goal, right? If it's no longer a secret, and we all know people who have said, I'm going to lose 10 pounds in the next 3 months, and you tell that to four people, knowing, you know, that might increase your drive to make it happen. So this idea of creating and communicating expectations is important. It's been proven that you are more likely to reach goals that are written down. Just the act of writing down a goal makes it more likely. Using a schedule, for example, setting deadlines for yourself, milestones. They're concepts in project management at work, but they're concepts that work, right, in your life. You know, have you ever taken a major accomplishment, broken it down into step by step, and celebrated when you reached the first step? So there's things like that. Follow up is key, absolutely key. So are you following up with yourself to make sure that what you got done was what you planned? If yes, great, take some time and celebrate. If not, figure out, is this a lack of effort issue? Is it how you used your time? Is it effectiveness? So it's not a lack of putting in an effort, but it's saying I didn't get the result I wanted. So how do I have to adjust my behavior?
This is amazing. What I've gotten out of our conversation today is the idea of focused attention on where you are and where you're going and what you want to achieve. And there are some tried and tested steps and concepts to help you decide that, rather than just being like a leaf in the wind and going through your life and just expecting yourself to end up where you envision that you think you'll be. And I think that's a big one. I remember when I first started to realize that I could control my direction in various ways. And if I didn't know how, I could seek a resource to help me find that out. But, you know, just letting life carry you along does not guarantee the end result that maybe you're envisioning.
Yes. And in the third book, I'll talk about the fact that initially experimentation or dabbling is fine, right? As we try and find out where do we think our talents lie? And, you know, we begin to then focus and hone in on them. Where do we think our passions lie? We dabble and we find out we're interested in some things more than others, and our passions develop out of that. But you can't dabble all your life. Otherwise, you will be like a leaf in the wind. So at some point, you know, you have to begin to focus, saying, you know, my particular passions or my talents or my goals and aspirations can't be just wherever the day takes me. That's a fragile place to be, you know, throughout your life. You know, what seems like carefree in your 20s seems like this, you know, stressful lack of planning in your 50s, right? Mm. Not knowing where tomorrow may take you. It's awesome when you're on college break. It's not so often when you're 55 and trying to plan how you're going to live in retirement in a fulfilled fashion. You work your entire life to save up to do those things that you have always said you wanted to do in retirement. And then what happens in retirement is what you have is the money, but not the time or the health. And my mom was traditionally a very healthy person. You know, they didn't get to do the things that they saved up and waited their whole life to do. It's like an unwritten story And wouldn't it be nice if we wrote that story earlier in our lives and chipped away at it all along, right? Found our passions, began to develop those, focus them, found what we're good at, tried to combine them. And so it's an irony, you know, for me in saying that, you know, there's two things we can't manufacture more of in our lives. And one is time and the other is attention. So we have to figure out where to use both effectively to be as fulfilled as we can. And the third book talks a little bit more about how we use what we do well and what we love to do to find that fulfillment. So I think that's, you know, probably on a personal note, that's what I learned from observing my parents. You know, there's always the, well, we'll save and do what we really want to do to be happy tomorrow. And then tomorrow never comes. So we do need to think about that. And I reflect much more on it now than I did even a few years ago.
Yeah, it's our own evolution. But things like reading somebody else's insight is going to kind of shorten that maybe lengthy journey to discover and actually get a chance to have a fulfilled life. Because really, as I say in many of my podcasts, there's only this moment. And what are you doing in this moment? It's the only one that counts. And so if you're not fulfilled in this moment, there's a problem. There's something that we need to deal with. I really love your perspective and the fact that you have such a rounded vision on life and experience and thoughts and emotions. And it's really a very great perspective for us to see it through your eyes. And I really thank you for writing this book. I can't wait to get my copy. And again, I'd love to have you on talking about your next one when it's baked and delivered.
Absolutely. I'll look forward to that as well.
Appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Please go to speakpipe.com/Deborah Jones to share what you thought about this episode and what you'd like to hear next on Own the Gray. This episode brought to you by Lunch with a Healer podcast. The best conversations happen when you're having lunch with a friend, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair at lunchwithahealer.com.